Yesterday I remarked that Jesus Christ is at the center of the whole story. The whole story of human history and of all history. But in the later days of Advent, in the last week of Advent, Jesus actually takes a little bit of a hidden place. He's not so prominent. And today's readings are a classic example of that. There's no mention at all of Jesus. Here we are just a few days before Christmas, but he's not mentioned. Now we understand why, because he's in the womb yet. His actions, his presence is hidden. And what we're doing here is we're getting the backstory of the preparations for the coming of the Messiah. The great preparation, in this case, being the conception of John the Baptist. So it's a time for us to reflect on God's intervention into situations of impossibility. In the readings, it's the case of two childless women. Both of them are described as barren, the mother of Samson and Elizabeth, mother of John. Now, when we reflect on barrenness, we probably tend to start first with personal experience or people whom we know. And we all know couples who have wanted to have children or who have had difficulty having children. It's not that uncommon. In fact, it's more common now, the challenges of infertility. So we know that this is a very heavy cross. In days past, well, in almost every generation of human history, this was a terrible affliction, especially for the woman, because it was always blamed on the woman. It's only in relatively recent times that biology has proven that it takes the fertility of both the father and the mother. But in before, if the husband was able to complete the marriage act, it was just assumed that the wife is the one responsible for having children or not. And so if she didn't have children, it was her fault or her curse. There are many cultures in which that barrenness would be a ground for dismissal or divorce or worse. So a very heavy affliction. It's sad and ironic that in our times, now again, I'm talking in the last 70, 80 years, 100 years, it's become so common for people to make themselves barren, to deliberately not have children, and even to sterilize themselves. That would be unheard of in almost any previous age of human history, because to not have children would be considered a curse, and to deliberately not have children is just so unthinkable. Well, there were eunuchs, of course, there were always childless people, but that was not something that you would naturally choose. That's why celibacy, even to this day in the church, is so countercultural. Like, why would anyone do that? But a lot of people decide, for various reasons, personal reasons, sometimes because they think it's good for the environment not to have children. There's a lot of strangeness going on when it comes to the fertility. But let's just stick with the biblical understanding. Children are a blessing. Children are a great blessing. And to not have them is, if not a curse, at least a deep cause of grief. And we know many people who have this cross. Now, whenever we know young couples who are trying to have children, longing to have children, we think of these stories in the Bible, and there's a lot of them, where a couple didn't have children. Abraham and Sarah are the first ones to come to mind. They were old. They didn't have any children. But in all these Bible stories, eventually, in God's own good time, he provides a child for the couple. And that's true. And that's... That shows our dependence on God and shows that the gift of life is a gift from God. And so it's right to look at these passages as signs of hope for childless couples, but only to a point, because sometimes God doesn't grant a child. In the biblical stories, they always come out happy, but it's not always that way. And sometimes it's medically, physically impossible. And the couple has to accept, this is our This is our condition. So we have to get past this level of the story of the individual couples or the individual women who want to have children and whom God grants that gift. I think what's good for us, especially in this Advent season, is to see these couples, especially we'll look at Zechariah and Elizabeth, as signs of the state of the human family. You could say the barrenness of the human family, the impossibility of the human family to be genuinely fruitful for the Lord. So here are Zechariah and Elizabeth. The gospel today starts out with very high praise of them. They are both from priestly families. They are righteous in the eyes of God. They are observing all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blamelessly. So this is top-notch. These are top-notch people. If we were to judge them purely by the standards of the Old Testament, these are the best. They fulfill the law, and they come from good stock. Children of Abraham, they come from priestly families. This is like the royal family of the Jews. So we're talking about the best that was available to the Jews. You might think of what Jesus says about their son John the Baptist much later, when he says, there's no man born of woman greater than John the Baptist. Well, that's because John comes from a great family, a great lineage, holy parents. But remember what Jesus said when he said that about John. But the least born into the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. So there's this huge leap from what is naturally possible to the human family and what is possible by the power of God. It's the leap from impossibility to divine possibility. So it's okay to have Zechariah and Elizabeth held up as great examples, because no matter how great they are, they can't have a child. And that's the very next line of the gospel. They had no child. And they're old. It's too late. It's like, it's an impossible situation. Now, that is a very accurate symbol of the human family without the active intervention of God. It's humbling. It might even sound negative to say that we're impossible, that we're hopeless, that we can't produce, but it's true. And there's countless examples of this. The one that comes to mind, just because it was recently in the news, is the financial mess in the Vatican. Maybe you heard about this big trial that was concluded on Saturday. The Vatican and the Vatican Bank and Vatican finances have been scandalous for years, for generations. All kinds of, you know, inside trading and corrupt investments and embezzlement and all kinds of things. Anyway, there's been this trial going on in the Vatican court system for over 2 years. One of the defendants is a cardinal, and then there's some very high-ranking Vatican officials and some very high-ranking Italian financiers and bankers and everything. Anyway, the verdicts were just handed out on Saturday, and the cardinal got 5.5 years in jail because of the financial improprieties or violations. But if you read the articles or stories about this trial, you realize they're just scratching the surface. This is one hornet's nest of corruption and confusion and one accusation against another, and who's telling the truth, and where did the money really go, and are the receipts really valid, and all this kind of stuff. And for me, it's just one more example of the mess of the human condition. So whether you're looking at the church, or whether you're looking at any civil government, or looking at any family or any corporation, there's all kinds of chaos. Think of any investigation of the government into government officials. I mean, they're in the news all the time. Oh, so-and-so did this bad thing. Well, then so-and-so says, no, I'm innocent. This is a politically motivated accusation. And then so-and-so says this, and so-and-so says that, and they're countering, and then so-and-so's in jail, and so-and-so's already suffered, and then there's assassinations, and there's... And the more you want to look into it and say, let's just settle this, let's get to the bottom of the problem, you never get to the bottom of it. You don't even know who's telling the truth. No, that is the human condition. That mess is the human condition. Am I being too negative? No. I'm being realistic. I'm not saying there's nothing good. We can look at all kinds of beautiful advancements, including advancements in our own lifetime. I know information technology and medical technology and information about the human person and I know also about creation. I mean, there's lots of beautiful advancements, but they're all so limited and they're all entrusted to this chaotic, barren condition. We live in the illusion that if we could just get our act together, if we could just cooperate, if we could just find some honest people and work together, we would be able to make it better. And to a certain degree, sure, but very limited degree. There's always an impossibility. Now, why is it important to recognize that? Because if we don't recognize that, we don't know the greatness of what God has done by entering into this condition. We don't really know what we're celebrating at Christmas time unless we know how far God has gone to become man and into what depths he has descended. If he is just going to help out some people who pretty much have their act together and can all they need is a little bit of advice and then they'll be able to live a good life, well, that's no big thing to celebrate. But if he's entering into an impossible situation and bringing forth great possibility, well, then we've got great joy to celebrate. We celebrate great joy. And that's what is happening here with the intervention of God, and both in the case of Samson, who is one of the judges. Remember, Samson himself is a pretty messed up character, but he was an instrument of God. John the Baptist was not a messed up character. He was the greatest man born of woman. He was sanctified in the womb. But he was not even worthy to unfasten the sandal on the foot of the Messiah. He was so far beneath what God was going to do that he said, "I don't even have to look at me. I'm nobody. I'm just a voice in the desert." What we're celebrating as we approach Christmas is not just a voice in the desert, but the one whose way he was sent to prepare, that is the Lord Jesus Christ. And he is the good news. He's the very good news. The one who is the answer to all the impossibility and barrenness and chaos and dysfunction in the human family. So why do we focus on barrenness? Not because we're morbid or we're down on ourselves or we're just negative, pessimistic people, but because it highlights the greatness of God's intervention, God's presence among us. That's what we're preparing our way to celebrate. So it's important for us to know the lay of the land before to know the condition, the darkness of our condition, so that we'll really appreciate the light when it shines.